Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges. September 11th, 2009, the Norris Group hosted I Survived Real Estate 2009. In this critical final quarter, the Norris Group assembled a Gold Star panel of accomplished industry specialists to discuss the impact of seismic economic shifts, head-scratching regulations, challenging legislation, and the accelerated pace of opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds for this unique event supported the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the Business Press, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronsgeist, Invest Club for Women, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for the website iSurvive2009.com, JK Short Sale, Entrust California and Hugh Broma, the Nixon Library, MVT Productions, the National Flip and Fix Network, and White House Catering. Visit iSurvive2009.com for information.
I have questions that I had prepared before their talks, and if you look at my paper, it's changed quite a bit. And this is sort of happening live. As I hear their comments, it sets up new questions. And so, with all the foreclosures that we have going on, even in California, you have a 9.7 default in a state that's lost 50% of value. There's a lot of character still showing, to me.
I really do think it's a testament to the culture, to the American culture, that you still have people honoring those contracts.
Yes.
I know if I had purchased my home and it turned out to be that bad a deal, I'd be really furious at my banker, at whoever made the loan, and at the appraiser. think about it. If you're the buyer in our system has always been on an island by him or herself. The realtor,
what?
The realtor does not have a fiduciary responsibility to the buyer unless they're contractually working with the buyer as a buyer's agent.
Okay.
The mortgage broker certainly doesn't have a fiduciary responsibility.
Okay.
The lender has underwriting standards but isn't responsible for the borrower to make the payments. The guys at Bear Stearns apparently didn't have any fiduciary responsibility, maybe to anybody.
Okay.
So. And you know, if you're a buyer, I remember I got my first mortgage. The research I did was my realtor said, if you don't have somebody to write the mortgage for you, here's the guy I always use. That was my research. And for 100-some years, that's worked really well in our system because everybody played by the rules.
Okay.
It's only the last 5 years when all the rules seem to have flown out the windows.
Okay. David, I've got a couple of questions for you. About 50 to 70% of loan modifications fail. Why do you think that is, and should principal reductions be part of loan modifications? I think I already know the answer to this one, but
that's another word for cram down, I would think. But I'd like to go back to something that you just said. The lender does have a fiduciary responsibility in that we have buyback agreements, and if we underwrite the loan, you should see how many of those loans are coming back from Fannie and Freddie right now in our face that they're asking us to repurchase. So we do have a fiduciary responsibility. We underwrite it, we fund it, we close it, unlike the brokers who really don't have a fiduciary.
No, that's fair. But
they don't.
But what's the recourse for the buyer in that case? You take a hit. The banker takes a hit. That's fair. But is there a recourse for the buyer in that transaction?
If they committed fraud. And I have a statistic for you that 87% of the loans that are going into foreclosure in the state have fraud committed on them.
This state.
That should bother you. That means that the loan officer or the realtor or the appraiser or somebody.
The buyer?
All knew exactly what they were doing. And I consult for a company that's based here that does fraud detection. I didn't mean to get off on this, but if that's okay.
Go ahead.
And when we actually call the borrower and do an interview, they say, hey, you know, they told me that even though I made $1,500 a month, if I put down $15,000, I know I'm a gardener, but they said to put down that I own a nursery. And when the house goes up in value, they'd split it with me. And
that's
the kind of stuff that's going on. We do the interview for. So hold to the number of 87% of fraud, and fraud is still being committed out there on a regular basis right now.
I'm glad you brought that up because, okay, now I'm going to...
But what was your first...
Now I've got a better one now that you've gotten that route.
Because I didn't know the answer to it anyway.
I just this last week talked to a president of a company that's located in California. I'm not going to be too specific. He just bought a pool of mortgages for $335 million for, I'll assume, 25 cents or less on the dollar. And his history was that he was in the subprime business big time and actually probably created the same paper that he is now buying and making a fortune on the other side. So I wanted.
I know who you're talking about.
Okay, you know who I'm talking about. Okay, I guess what's your opinion of that?
Shameful.
Okay.
It just flat is. There are bad actors everywhere.
Okay.
They need to be called out. But I mean, there is that going on.
The no down loan, that concept that I just came out with.
Can I say something about subprime mortgages?
Yeah, sure.
I love giving this analogy to Barney Frank. And it's changed a little bit. I've done four of my 14 testimonies in front of Congressman Frank. I was asked over here just a minute ago by a lady, and she said, "What do you think about him?" Now, before you go, "Oh, boo, boo, boo," let me get through the whole statement here. He's probably one of the most intelligent people in Congress. From an IQ standpoint, he gets it. Just don't agree with his policies because his policies are wrong. He's a highly intelligent man. But I sat in front of him and I said, "We're talking about subprime mortgages." And a year ago, 8 out of 10 of those were still paying on time. Right now, 7 out of 10. So let's line up 70 people in the room. They got a subprime loan. 30 of them are default or in foreclosure. Let's tell the other 70 they didn't deserve to buy a house. It wasn't the products that were bad. It was they were given to the wrong people. That's a good statistic. 70%, you hit that in baseball, you're in the Hall of Fame. And by the way, the 30% that are failing, 15%, 50% of those will do a loss met workout. So 85% of the people who got a subprime loan won't lose their house. But you don't hear that. That's a real statistic. The media spins it the other way. It may be for now, but, I mean, we're dealing with now.
Okay.
I mean, you deal with the economic stuff that's now, so let's talk about it now.
Loan modifications, they fail at a pretty high rate. Should they include principal reductions?
On a case-by-case basis, yes, they should. But everything should be done on a case-by-case basis. We used to underwrite loans 25 years ago when I was a loan officer full-time. On a case-by-case basis. We didn't have DUL, P, and DO in a black box that we don't know what's in it. We still don't know what's in it.
Okay.
I'm a DE underwriter. My wife's an underwriter. I used to tell people, you know, I sleep with the underwriter to get my loan approved. It's not fraud. It was legitimate. But think about it. We manually underwrote loans and people had to qualify. It's what we're doing again today. We're making the best loans today we've made in 15 years. But when they go through automated, that's part of the downfall of what happened. But
okay.
Yes, loan on case-by-case basis, the answer is yes. And that's,
okay.
I know that's surprising.
No.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself. It's this side of the room.
Okay.
Chris is rubbing off. We are asking the system, and we are asking lenders and servicers to use tools in a way they were never designed to be used. Okay, we're trying to build a house with a screwdriver when we need a hammer and saw. We're talking about loan modification programs, forbearance programs, workout programs that were meant, to his point, to be used on a case-by-case basis, and we're trying to turn them into mass-market products. And we're looking for President Obama or somebody to wave a magic wand over the whole thing. It's out of pixie dust. People complain about short sales. Short sales were supposed to be a rare occurrence for that unimaginable circumstance where somebody fell on bad financial times at exactly the same time as house loss value. And now we're wondering why we can't ask a single loan officer, a loss mitigation manager, to do 100 of them a day because that's how many files he's getting. It's that the tools were not meant for the volume of activity we're seeing, and the system is broken.
Yeah, Tommy, can you fix that pretty quick for him?
I really think we can.
Yeah.
I passionately believe we can. But you have to arrive at value.
I think you could come up with that almost any day you wanted to.
If you arrive at value, just like, you know, the thing that amazes me is probably everybody in this room that is invested in the stock market or has been invested in the stock market, your equity is off at least 30% unless you're very, very bright. And yet, there's nothing you don't think the government should change, some sort of modification. They shouldn't come down with a cram down. You don't have any other. You just say, you know what? I made a miscalculation. We have made a terrible miscalculation in the real estate industry, and I think it was driven by a lot of very false hopes. The number one thing being, those of you that are gray-headed know that real estate does not always go up. And we have sold the concept, Pat, don't take this offense to this, but we have sold the concept. Okay, we have sold the concept that when you buy a home, it automatically goes up. When you buy a home, you have a home to live in. That's a wonderful thing. That's what its number one purpose is. The fact that you think it is for sure going to go up and speculate on that will bring you where we are tonight. That's what I believe strongly.
Well, Pat, John, I'm going to get right back to you. Pat, has the reason why people buy homes changed since 07 or 06? Has the mentality changed?
It depends where you live.
Okay.
All real estate is local. I think that there are markets that went crazy, and because of that, those crazy markets, people were starting to look at real estate as an investment. For years in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where our markets haven't gone sky high, we're talking about a place to live. This is your home. This is the place you come home to, and this is where your family lives. And that's what real estate's all about. And when the markets went like this in areas, and I'm going to say California is probably leading edge in that, people started to view it in the wrong way. And I agree wholeheartedly with Tommy that our marketplaces, and again, depending where you live, got skewed because of that. And I agree that a house and the realtors who have brought some of those ideas out about the investment and, you know, we're going to, you know, you got to buy this because it's going to be your life savings, or you're going to buy this because you're going to flip it next week. I think that our houses in our marketplaces are sold as a place to live. Now, there are investors, and I think that's good, too.
I'm sorry.
More problems from the peanut gallery.
The NAR hires economists to go out there and produce ridiculous research to support prices. There was never one point in time when the NAR or the California Association of Realtors stood up in 2005 and 2006 and said this is a bubble and prices are too high. I never heard that come out of your organization.
Well, I'm sorry, but we had very valid research. And I'm sorry if you didn't hear that I don't think anybody
bubble. I debated economists from the CAR and from NAR. I stood on stage and listened to these guys tell me that there wasn't a bubble and prices were perfectly fine in California when they had tripled in 7 years. You can't possibly sit here and tell us that the National Association of Realtors was just an innocent victim on the sideline that was just hit blindsided by these crazy buyers in California. I'm sorry, that's not the case. Your industry supported the bubble. They made massive amounts of money from the bubble, and now you want a government handout because the bubble has collapsed.
I don't agree. I know that, and I'm not going to debate with you because you are much smarter than I am.
I think our viewing audience just went up online. I don't know.
But I will say this, that I think that currently we have a different economist and a new economist. I don't know if you've met him or looked at what he's doing. But our livelihood and the way that our economists brought numbers together, we felt was credible. And you didn't agree, and there were people that did agree, and I will respectfully disagree with what you're saying. So,
Other questions? Let me ask another question.
I have a story I'd like to tell.
Okay, go ahead.
This is an interesting story. I moved to Oklahoma in 1985, and I came from Western Illinois at that time, and we had just gone through a serious depression in rural America. I don't know, those of you in California might not have been affected by that. So when I came to Oklahoma in 1985, I was fresh from seeing radical real estate devaluations. For an example, I sold a farm at auction that brought $3,500 an acre. The same farm, I sold it right before I moved to Oklahoma. It brought $1,200 an acre. And by the way, there was no bailout. But here's the real issue that I wanted to talk about. I met a lady immediately after I came that wanted to sell her house there in Tulsa. And I looked at her house, unfortunately, she was upside down at that particular time. And Tulsa's a very stable market. And I said, ma'am, your house will not bring what you owe on it. That's one of the few people that have ever really gotten violently mad at me. She was, irate. She says, I want you to know I'm from California. I'm going to go back to California. Never heard of such a thing. I'm going to write my congressman. A law should be passed that a house cannot ever devalue. And that lady meant every word she said.
Was that Nancy Pelosi?
That was Nancy. She came back. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Somewhere I've lost control here. Okay, I'm going to... Now, let's get back to a subject that I brought up here. The nothing down sale loan. I mean, you were saying the $8,000 was good for the industry. Is, first of all, wouldn't you get at least the same result with a qualified buyer and nothing down?
You know, I'm really not sure about that, because what I'm finding is that a qualified buyer, there's a lot of qualified buyers sitting along on this fence. And one of the things that we've been seeing for quite some time is that they've been sitting there because they've been hearing about constantly all media's talking about markets going down, prices are going down, and all that kind of stuff. And okay, but when are you going to turn it? I mean, it's a little bit like Tommy in the stock market. When are you going to pick up that stock, and when are you going to know when it hits bottom or when it's coming back up? And what's happening, and I'm just going to speak for my marketplace, which is Grand Rapids, Michigan, which really doesn't equate completely to all of the California markets, some of them, I think. But in Grand Rapids, what's happening is that the choice is down. I mean, for a while when those prices went down with all of the foreclosure, there was just one heck of a lot of choice. People could walk in and, you know, you could pick from a lot of houses. Now with the $8,000 tax credit and with a lot of buyers buying up the low-priced houses and investors, I think it's a really good investor market to turn those houses. But what we're finding is that now that the $8,000 tax credit is in, those people who have been sitting on the fence are saying, well, I think it's about time for me to finally get in. When are interest rates going to be lower? The things they're looking at is low interest rates, choice in the marketplace, and they're looking at affordability. And right now we're finding that there's less choice because the market's going up, and the prices are tipping up, which you've seen on some of those graphs. And so those people are going, well, I think I better buy now and get into the market.
Do we have to induce them with a check? I'm not being facetious.
I would have said no 6 months ago.
Okay. Is it okay for them not to buy? I mean, in other words, I don't want to really get in the habit of always handing somebody a bonus.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
and
it bothers me a bit to think
that we have to pay off somebody to perhaps get into the housing market.
Yeah.
But
can I uplift Pat a little bit?
Sure.
Because she's getting just picked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and I don't like that.
I feel
either.
Terrible.
Yeah, really. Come on. I'm the only woman up here. Give me a break.
I want to get Chris fired up because he's just so passive. But I want you to be aware that there is a proposal out there right now by Senator Dodd and Senator Isaacson, bipartisan, signed on by 14 other senators when they come back from their little vacation earlier this week, to go next year or right now for a $15,000 tax credit. Okay? Now, hang on just a second.
Now, that's better.
Yeah. 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 Hang on. The current $8,000 tax credit started out the last two times in the Senate as a $15,000 tax credit and got whacked down in the House, went to markup, stayed at $7,500, came back to $8,000. That was the process. MBA is supporting, for two reasons, a $15,000 tax credit open to everybody. It's not a black, white, Hispanic problem. It's not a low, middle, high income problem. It's an American problem. It should be open to everybody if it's fair. We want to be given a closing.
Owner-occupied and
non-owner? Owner-occupied and second homes is what we're promoting.
Not now, investors?
I'm telling you what we're promoting now.
I got to get a plug in.
Well, here's one statistic nobody else has put out tonight.
Okay.
Doesn't matter whether it's bailout, doesn't matter whether it's the tax credit. Every time somebody buys a house, after investment and after closing cost, they spend an average of $7,500 on that house. That is money that goes into Lowe's, Home Depot, Porter Payne, Haverty's Furniture, whatever it is. That is money from the consumer that they spend. Our economist, Jay Brinkman, estimates that if the $15,000 tax credit was approved today over the next year, it would spur an additional 400,000 purchases over the next year. Take 7,500 times 400,000, boom. Wait. You've gone first every time. You hang on a second. And here's the last thing. I cannot document this, all right? But you know this is true. Every time somebody buys a house under this first-time homebuyer Pat's talking about, or if it's 15, whatever it is, I would argue with you that they may and probably are taking a house off the market that is either in foreclosure or about to go into foreclosure. The money the government's going to spend on that to bail it out anyway. So there is a help. Say again? Oh, I'd agree with you. That's a different. That doesn't have anything to do with this. Okay. I will, but I mean that's a different discussion than what we're talking about here.
Listen, I don't know why you're being so modest about this. What 15,000? Why so cheap? No, seriously. Let's go 150,000, and let's go for 20,000 in every car. We'll go for $300 on every beer.
For
$500 on bottles of vodka.
Now, Chris, you can be as sarcastic as you want.
We'll go to Vegas. We go to Vegas. If I put down $10 on the blackjack table, we're going to have the government put down another $10 to double up on my bet.
Now, listen.
What the hey, it creates jobs in Vegas. No, listen, you can't play this game forever. You can't subsidize
things. I'm not playing the game.
Yeah.
I'm saying there is a proposal out there. I'm strictly bringing it up.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. But I'm simply showing the ridiculousness of the proposal.
Which you do so well tonight.
I appreciate that. But no, seriously, listen, there is a reason to have these things in the short run. The markets can get into sort of a death spiral.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2009, 1M1 Properties, Appraisal Institute of Southern California, Awesome Limousines, Community Reinvest Group, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, FarBelowMarket.com, The Inland Empire Investors Forum, Las Brisas Escrow, Los Angeles Meeting and Event Center, Mike Cantu, The Mortgage Equity Group,
National Association of Real Estate Investors, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Realty Track, Saddleback Valley Communities, San Jose Real Estate Investor Association, Stars Photography, Tony Alvarez, and the Women's Council of Realtors Inland Valley Chapter.